What's up, Atlanta sports fans? I'm Graham Waldrop, and alongside me, as always, is Adam Kalal, and we are Atlanta Zone, two Atlanta natives recapping the week that was in Atlanta professional sports, wacky ass hijinks, and analysis. Adam, how's it going, sir?
It's going very well, Graham. We're back, baby.
Back for a new year, our third year of Atlanta Zone, or maybe our fourth year. We started in 2017.
Calendar year?
Yes.
So 2017 we started?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is our fourth, we're beginning our fourth year.
Flying by, Junior.
Yeah.
Flying by.
Time flies when you're an Atlanta sports fan.
Yes, it does.
You have so much fun.
We got a lot to catch up on.
We do. We haven't had a show in, what, 3 weeks?
I feel motivated again, though. I feel refreshed. We had one of the best sports weekends pretty much all year.
And one of the, I would wager this is like a top 15 sports weekend in the history of Atlanta sports. And the sad part about that is that an Atlanta professional sports team didn't even play a meaningful game during this weekend.
Right. But, you know, I mean, when you're a loser, Graham, you want to pull people down with you.
Yeah, and that's exactly what happened Saturday and Sunday. Patriots lose, which was immensely satisfying to behold. And the thing, the weird thing about the Patriots, though, is that I don't hate them as much as I hate the Falcons for losing that game, but it's still, they still beat you in the Super Bowl, so you still have to have some sort of animosity towards them. But the Saints, for the second time in 3 years, lose to the Vikings on the last play of a game, of a playoff game, be eliminated.
3 years in a row, they've lost on the last play of the game.
Now. Yes, but two of those three were the Vikings, which is even funnier, considering that no one gave the Vikings a chance going into that game. And they hung tough with them the entire game, took them to overtime. And once they got the once they won the coin toss, I sort of just had this feeling where I was like, okay, I think they're going to do it. I think the Vikings are going to take them out.
It's even funnier because they're losing to like loser quarterbacks too. It's Case Keenum 1 year, and then Jared Goff, and now Kirk Cousins.
Oh, Goff wasn't a loser last year.
Goff's, but we see now Goff's a loser.
Perhaps he was a loser this year. Certainly,
did you see Goff in the Super Bowl? Loser. That was the same year.
Okay. Yeah. Fair enough.
Yeah.
But he had a great season that year.
Point is, they're not losing to Tom Brady.
Right. Or Aaron Rodgers.
Or Drew Brees.
Or Matt Ryan.
Yeah. And Drew Brees. I mean, I feel like if they'd kept Taysom Hill in there longer, like more plays for Taysom Hill, they could probably win. But
we'll never know, and I'm happy we'll never know.
Yep, it's not our team to discuss either.
Yeah, and they lose at home. It's not like they had to go to Minnesota. They lose in the Superdome, which is one of the hardest places to play in the NFL for sure.
And they're in that game because we beat them, because the Falcons beat them.
Yes, that really did put a stick in their craw, as it were.
Yep.
And before we segue into actually talking about Atlanta professional sports, let us be the last to wish you all a happy new year.
I really don't think anyone's picking up on that joke, but maybe.
Well, maybe. We'll see. We got a lot to unpack here, Adam. Since we were last on the air, Dan Quinn and Thomas Dimitroff were not sent packing. They were rehired. They have 3 years left on their contract. And in a season in which, I don't know, the Falcons spent two first-round picks on offensive line and invested $38 million in the offensive line to protect their $150 million quarterback. We gave up 50 sacks, which was tied for fifth most in the league. And we decided to bring everybody back. It's fine. Status quo. Everything's all good. But, you know, we still gave up 50 sacks and blew $38 million. And two first-round picks. Not to say that those first-round picks are finished products by any stretch of the imagination.
And they did show promise at the end of the
year. They did, and they both dealt with health issues. But the point being is you did that, and you spent $38 million, and you, Thomas Dimitroff gets to keep his job. And Dan Quinn gets to keep his job, and he has a huge hand in the personnel. And I'm not done yet. And we only registered 28 total sacks, which was 29th worst in the NFL. But yeah, let's bring everybody back. Everything's great. Status quo fits perfectly. And, you know, we also had one of the worst run offenses in the league. And only three times in the history of Dirk Cutter's career as an offensive coordinator has he finished top 10 in rushing offense. Most of the time he's finishing 28th, 29th, 30th, 25th, whatever. You know, at the bottom of the barrel. And this season was no exception as we finished believe, like 28th or 29th in overall rush defense this rush offense this year. It was a terrible – when you look at it as a cohesive whole, which as a season should be evaluated, this was a piece of shit season. And it's amazing that we got 7 wins. And in more ways than once, it's amazing that we got 7 wins with those shitty stats, and it's amazing that we only won 7 games with the amount of talent that is on this team. It's pathetic in all respects.
You done now?
Yeah, I'm done.
Okay. Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, it's very – I'd say 80% of Falcons fans were expecting Quinn to be gone or wanting him to be gone probably. But it's definitely like just – it's a recency bias.
Oh, totally.
Play by blank.
Like, yeah, if you had started 6-2. And gone 1-7, we'd be having a different conversation.
Yeah, you finish 1-7, you're done. But, you know, it was the big win against the Saints and then the 49ers that probably saved his job. But, I mean, once again, those were two games where we were – they started playing well once we're out of it.
I don't get that.
Yeah.
Clearly, they did make adjustments. Things did get better, which you have to, you know, take into consideration. But it's like – Dan Quinn should know how to operate with his team at this point. And I get the whole consistency thing and the best, you know, teams have a consistent coaching staff year in and year out, or a consistent head coach at least year in and year out. But, I mean, you look at those teams, they've achieved immense success. You look at, you know, Steelers, Mike Tomlin's won 2 Super Bowls. Belichick's won 6 Super Bowls. The Cowboys with Jason Garrett suck ass. But, you know, we won't talk about them. But I'm just saying – I don't like that whole consistency thing when you look at this team is consistently inconsistent, and the only way to get rid of that is to clean house of your shitty general manager and your shitty coach.
So here's where you gotta – here's Arthur Blank's thinking that he had.
Is it that he just doesn't want to put in the time and effort to find a new head coach that could really put this team over the top because it's a pain in the ass?
Well, I don't think that's it. But I also don't think there are any head coaching candidates out there that we were like – anyone was super stoked about.
Sometimes the best
head, big adjustment.
Yeah, but sometimes the best head coaches sort of come out of nowhere. You just don't know,
right? But you don't want to. I mean, I guess his thinking: you got a 36-year-old quarterback. Julio's probably what 31, 32,
something like that.
Yeah. You got a couple years of these guys.
That right, small window. 36, is he?
He's 36.
Jesus.
Yeah.
hold on, I'm gonna fact check you. He's 34. Give the man some the man some slack. Still not a spring chicken by any stretch of imagination.
35 by the next season.
Yes, he will be 35 by the time the next season starts.
He's 35. So you don't want to just go with some random coach that you don't know is going to have success, and then 3 years from now you find out he sucks. So he was kind of looking at the. I know that he was mentioning Sean Payton and how Sean Payton had like 3 straight 7-9 seasons before their Super Bowl.
But he had a shitty defense, and he had statistically the best off, like one of the top 5 offenses in the league year in and year out. So, I mean, you can still blame him for 7-9. I'm just saying, like, this team isn't like beating the door down statistically in any regard.
No.
So I think that's a weak sauce. Fucking comparison. And Sean Payton won a Super Bowl, which is also something that should be considered.
After his 3 straight 7-9 seasons.
No, he had the 3 straight 7-9 seasons after he won the Super Bowl.
That was a long time ago they won a Super Bowl, wasn't it?
It's 2011.
Okay, you're right.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's just the whole idea of not completely restarting, but someone has to go, Graham. Like,
yeah.
Even if Dan Quinn's not the number one on the chopping block.
Well, I think we got rid of the defensive line coach and some other, which is warranted, I guess, after how terrible they were. But, I mean, I don't know how Thomas can keep avoiding being fired after misfire after misfire after misfire in the draft and free agency, blowing, you know, so much cap space is tied up. And he went on record saying, you know, we're not in cap hell or whatever anyone wants to say or whatever anyone wants to call it. But you're going to have to release a significant amount of players in order to free up money to sign your incoming draft class and much more, and then pursue folks in free agency at a cheaper rate. And you have a lot of tough decisions in terms of just cutting bait on guys like Freeman, who I think we should have traded. But you've got to cut bait on him. You've got to cut bait on DeVondre Campbell. You're going to start you know, especially with Campbell, he really picked up his game the second half of the season. I don't foresee us re-signing him. We're probably going to blow a bunch of money on re-signing Austin Hooper when, as much as I love Hoop, for the betterment of the team, we should not do it. No. I mean,
and really just looking at this past season, because Quinn's got the argument that the players clearly endorse him. They did play hard for him at the end.
And they found their identity by week 15, as Dan Quinn went on record saying, which is just... That alone should make you be fired. I mean, good God.
Yeah. I mean, to give Dan credit, I mean, him making those adjustments, swallowing his pride, saying he can't do the defensive coordinator thing. I mean, that's something you want to see out of a head coach, at least, that they're willing to make adjustments and aren't just stubborn.
Yeah.
But Dimitroff, just this season alone, that money into Jamon Brown and Carpenter – where these guys were healthy scratches a lot of times this year.
Yeah, and we just blew so much money on them for multiple years. Multiple years.
Yeah, so it's those.
They take up a big chunk of that $38 million I was talking about.
Picking up Vic Beasley's fifth-year option this year, not trading. I mean, the Lions were reportedly willing to take on a significant amount of Devontae's contract. And
I don't know how you don't make that move. What fucking reality?
He didn't make that, and now we're probably going to have to cut him and eat that money.
Yeah, you could have gotten back a draft pick that you spent on McGarry. You know, we're not going to have whatever, I don't remember what pick we used to trade up for him.
But he also fleeced the Patriots in the Mohamed Sanu trade.
He did. Mohamed Sanu was the ultimate double agent. It's like he goes to we trade him to the Patriots, we get a second round pick somehow, which even before Sanu's disappointing tenure with the Patriots, it was like, that's overpaying. For yeah. sure, you know, even though we love Sanu, it's like he's not worth, to me, a second-round pick at all. And then he has a pretty decent game against the Ravens, even though they got their butts kicked. But it's like after that, you look at his stat line, it's a bunch of games where it's like 2 catches for 6 yards, 3 catches for 9 yards, a lot of single-digit numbers there. I mean, it was just like he has to be working for us to destroy the Patriots from the inside. Because of him, Belichick and Brady might leave the Patriots. You never know.
Well, and then the first round – I mean, for them to lose in the wild card, I mean, that just makes that draft pick even more valuable. So yes. Now we have 3 picks in the top 53, I think.
Right.
Which is the other thing on Sanu, mm-hmm. and him sucking with the Patriots, that's a guy like you, Matt Ryan lover. That's a check off in the Matt Ryan box.
Yeah, Sanu is.
He sucked. I mean, he was very mediocre with the Bengals.
Yeah.
Guy who showed some talent but never did anything big. Comes to the Falcons. Stock rises big, goes to the great Tom Brady, doesn't do shit.
Right. And you can make the argument Brady's getting older and whatever, but Sanu was a pale imitation of himself in New England for whatever reason, in all seriousness. But let's look at some of the guys, Adam, that the Falcons could cut. If you cut Keanu Neal, who has been injury-plagued, but would severely decimate the secondary, that would save close to $6.5 million. Desmond Trufant. All right, how about this? I'm gonna tell you who these guys are that are candidates to be cut, and you're gonna tell me whether or not we should cut them.
How much money do I have to save?
I will tell you, and then you can make your decision.
Okay.
Desmond Trufant, or excuse me, Keanu Neal would save you $6.46 million if you cut him right now.
Okay. I need all the numbers.
Okay. Desmond Trufant would save you $4.95 million.
Okay.
Alan Bailey, who played decent against the run on the edge, would save you $4.5 million. Tyson Brelo, who we for some reason re-signed in the offseason, and the only good thing he did all year was catch that 30-yard touchdown pass from Matt Ryan in a meaningless game against Tampa Bay, which was fun, but it was like, God damn you, Sam Brelo, would save you $3.75 million. Devontae Freeman, if you cut him, would save $3.5 million. Ricardo Allen, who I love very much, would save you $3.125 million. Luke Stocker, who I never really saw even take the field this year, if he was on the field, I didn't notice him, would save you $2.6 million. Matt Schaub, old Mr. 400 yards passing against the Seattle Seahawks, therefore he should be the starting quarterback, would save $2 million against the cap.
What are you looking at here?
This is...
You sure these are...
These are real numbers.
Don't some of these guys have, like, guaranteed contracts for beyond this year?
They do, but still, you cut them now, you save... you still save money.
Eating the rest of the money.
Right, and so then Tack McKinley, if you cut him, would save $1.2 million against the cap. Alex Mack, which is almost unfathomable to think of, but we'll just bring it up just for the sake of it, would save you $8 million against the cap.
Eight?
Yeah.
Okay.
So Keanu Neal, given his injury history, would save you the second most amount of money in that whole list of guys.
Ooh, that's tough, Graham. How much money do I need to save here for draft picks?
Well, I don't know where the cap situation is, but it's pretty tight. And right now, you with the cap where it is, it would be damn near if you don't do anything, it'd be damn near impossible to sign your incoming draft.
Right, well, I'm more inclined to say goodbye to Trufant.
Okay.
Than Neal.
I would agree with that. I think, especially with the way Sheffield and Oliver played in the second half of the season, they were pretty outstanding.
Yeah.
Against solid personnel for the most part. I mean, they did a really good job. So I would agree with that.
You know, I'm all about getting rid of Devontae.
Yep. So far you've saved, I don't know, like eight-ish, nine-ish million dollars.
Yeah, eight and a half. Luke Stocker, he's definitely gone.
Yep.
Shelby's gone.
So that's 12-ish, 13-ish.
I feel like we need Sambrello for depth, Graham.
He's a walking corpse of an NFL player.
We always
player.
Have to have him playing.
We don't.
Think about it. He was better than Jamon Brown or Carpenter.
The only reason he was better is because he actually played.
Well, I'm sure there's a reason he's playing over them.
Well, that's a good point. I mean, those guys. I can't even keep Carpenter and Brown apart. I just knew they both underperformed and one of them was injured every once in a while. But yeah, okay. Yeah. So you want to keep Sambrello.
Well,
would you ever, like 3 years ago, would you have imagined if I said you can cut Ty Sambrello or you can cut Devontae Freeman and you would make the decision to cut Devontae Freeman? Would you ever think that would be an actual...
That's a good point. Okay, Ty Sambrello's gone. We could get like a sixth round tackle to replace him.
There you
probably.
Go.
Okay, that's who I'm cutting.
So you're cutting Sambrello, Devontae, Trufant, Stocker, Shop.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's a pretty... I mean, I wouldn't disagree with that. Bailey kind of holds some consideration just because it would save $4.5 million. But
I just feel like we need all the line depth we can get.
I agree, especially the fact that you're hopefully not going to re-sign Vic Beasley, even though he did pick it up in the second half of the season. He was like an embodiment of the Falcons' second half. He started to play a lot better. He finished with 8 sacks, which is very respectable. But where were you in the first half? You were nothing.
Right. Yeah, that stat line is so misleading for anyone who's watched the Falcons. Like,
yeah,
he's going to be one of those guys. Who was that guy we got from the Vikings like 10 years ago?
Oh, yeah. I know who you're talking about. I can't remember his name off the top of my head.
Like, he comes out. He had like 9 sacks the year before. And it was like, oh, this is the guy who's going to be on the other side of
John Abraham.
John Abraham.
Yeah.
And, I bet it's just like a Vic Beasley situation. It was like he gets some sacks, but it's just like...
Ray Edwards. God, he sucked for us. Man, I was so hyped when we got him.
Yeah, probably because he saw the stat line.
Yeah. I didn't really know who he was until we got him. So that, and he went on to have a decent professional boxing career, Adam. 12 wins, 1 loss, and 1 draw. After he decided to hang up the cleats, which was shortly after being released from the Falcons, the Minnesota Casino... a Minnesota casino had a professional bout against Keenan Goodberger Hickman, and the rest is history.
Right. I did not know that, Graham.
Yeah.
I appreciate that little tidbit.
Oh, absolutely.
But the point is, I don't know if Vic's got a boxing career in his future or not, but I feel like he's going to be that guy to a team where – I don't know, like the Jaguars are going to sign him and they're going to give him $10 million, be all stoked to have a guy who had 8 sacks coming in, the big edge rusher, and we're going to be like, we know something else, something you guys don't know.
Yeah. So for the Falcons.
Well, that'd be a great place for him.
Yeah, for the Falcons in 25 games, he had 3.5 sacks. And all of those sacks came in 2011.
Oh, we're on Ray Edwards again.
Yeah. Just saying how shitty he was.
Yeah. Well, Vic's a better player than him.
I would think so.
Yeah.
But I don't know. Who cares? Vic needs to go regardless. Like, if you re-sign Vic Beasley, then you have truly gone insane.
How much? Well, no.
Not you, but
no.
Thomas.
Because you're going to have to give him a big deal.
Well, I'm saying, how much money would you bring Vic Beasley back for?
You couldn't. You'd have to. You couldn't put a gun to my head to bring Vic Beasley back. You might as well just pull the fucking trigger, because I'm not doing it.
$4 million, you're not bringing back Vic Beasley?
No. I'm finding a replacement. I know who he is. I've watched him play.
$4 million?
No. I can use that $4 million, split up between two guys who will equal his production.
Maybe.
Maybe not. But that would be my stance on
$2 million.
It. Give me $1 million and I'll do it.
1.5.
3. 1.3 is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. Yeah.
That's as high as 1. We 5. Want to go. Okay. 1 year deal for $1.3 million. I'd do that all day.
He's probably going to get about 10 somewhere.
He might get more than that. I mean, he was paid $12 million this year. Mm-hmm. That's just crazy. But yeah, I am not optimistic at all about this outlook for the Falcons. Raheem Morris was moved to defensive coordinator. Jeff Albrich.
That's a good move.
Yeah. For what you're doing. For where you are right now. Yeah, that's a good move. Jeff Albrich, who called first and second down on defense as a defensive coordinator after Dan Quinn relieved himself of his defensive play calling duties, is now the assistant head coach. I think those promotions are well earned, and I think those guys more than anyone are the reason that Dan Quinn has been brought back. I mean, without making those moves and those guys performing as well as they did in those roles that they had, we're not having this conversation right now.
I was listening to the Falcoholic today, and they were having – I mean, they were just as upset as you are. But they were talking about how a lot of people compare Dan Quinn to Mike Smith, and how a couple years of mediocrity for Mike Smith wasn't acceptable, where
right.
We're kind of saying that it is for Dan Quinn. But the big difference between Dan Quinn and Mike Smith is success in the playoffs.
True. He has won more in the playoffs.
Smitty had one win
in the one playoffs. One win, and Lara was 5 or 6 years.
Yeah,
Dan Quinn has 3. Should have had a... If Dan Quinn had won the Super Bowl, I'd be willing to give him a much longer leash. But at this point, I can't do it. But I'm not the owner. But
I just hope we're not sitting here next year having this exact same discussion.
I think we will be.
Because I really thought, it's playoff or bust this year.
Yeah.
For Dan Quinn.
Yeah. And that's what it should have
been. Once you fire your offensive coordinator, your defensive coordinator, make yourself defensive coordinator, fire your special teams coach, it's on you now.
Right. And you failed as hard as anyone can fail when you inserted yourself into the defensive coordinator role. No one knew what the hell they were doing. Yeah. And then you bring in all these other guys. You bring in Albrich, and you decide to move Raheem Morris, who was a wide receivers coach, back to defense, which is a strong suit, and then everything takes off. That makes you look even worse. So why are we bringing you back? It's just incredible to me.
Well, it makes him look
smart for realizing he's an idiot. But that's the thing. It's like, how much did that have to do with him once we actually had success, other than putting those guys in those positions? Did he really do anything at that point to cultivate success in the second half of the season? We can't answer that, but I have to ask the question, even if it's, I guess, fucking rhetorical at this point, because we don't have the inside view into Flowery Branch.
Well, you know what they say, Graham? A good manager just knows who to put in the right place and get out of their way.
I wish he would have known that in August. God damn it.
Yep.
I could say this. I will say this. Dan Quinn, at the very least, was willing to acknowledge that he screwed up. He made moves. The Falcons were a lot better once he made the moves. So I can't take that away from him. What has Thomas Dimitroff done to retain his position?
The Sanu trade, that's it. He's lasted how many regimes now?
He was brought in with Mike Smith. So this is his second regime, technically. But he makes the same mistakes over and over again. We talked about the mistakes with the Paul Solei and Tyson Jackson in the 2014 season. We talked about the Jamon Brown and Carpenter now on the offensive line. It's like, we've talked about that to death, but it's just like, he doesn't seem to learn from his mistakes. And that's not to say he hasn't made decent picks, but it's over the years. But you got to look at the trenches, and he just cannot evaluate talent very well there at all.
I mean, maybe Arthur was just looking at what he did this last year in the first round, though, with those guys in the trenches.
And it's hard to totally evaluate that because those guys haven't had full seasons, but they were able to hold up a little bit more. But at the same time, I mean, Matt Ryan was sacked 6 times or something like that in that Tampa Bay game. He was getting accosted.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know And I don't think Matt Ryan's going to be one of those guys that can play in, you know, until he's 40 like Breeze and Brady, because he's had horrific offensive line protection throughout his entire career outside of a couple of guys. You know, the early years when we had Michael Turner and we had those nasty bastards like Harvey Dahl and company running point, it was like that was a decent offensive line, but it feels like ever since we lost Todd McClure.
Super Bowl year, we had a good line.
Super Bowl year, we did have a good line, but it just feels like that's very much an anomaly. It's never like we ever have a really cohesive, and building a line is not an easy thing to do, but I'm just saying it just seems like more often than not, we always are talking about Matt Ryan taking a pounding each year, and he was sacked 50 times this year, which is the most he's ever been sacked in a season at his age 34 season, his 12th season in the NFL. I mean, he can't take this anymore. For the love of God.
At least he's a... At least they got something to like build off of this year. We're not starting from scratch on the line like we were last year.
That's true.
And you got Mac possibly in his last year
for retirement. You hope he can hold up.
Yeah. The two rookies, Jake Matthews. So you just need to find another guard,
since you're two guards you spent so much money on, collected like 8 years, and I don't even want to know how much money it was. Suck.
It was a lot of money.
Yeah. And let's talk about the last thing I want to talk about, the Falcons. The retention of Dirk Koetter. I don't get that either. I guess it's, again, continuity. But it's not like the Falcons really did that well offensively this year. They weren't trash, but they weren't – I mean, we were trash running the ball.
Where were we ranked offensively? Felt like our offense was decent. I think the rushing offense being as piss poor as it was is because we were behind in so many games.
Well, it's also retaining a running back who shouldn't be in the game. So we had the number 3 ranked passing offense, averaged 294.6 yards per game through the air. I think a lot of that's inflated because, as you mentioned, well, like, we were down a lot. Scoring, and we didn't have a good running game.
Scoring offense. Like scoring, where do we rank?
We ranked 13th overall. 23.8 points a game.
Average.
Which it shouldn't be, considering you got Matt Ryan and Julio Jones on the same team. Mm. We finished 30th running the football with a little over 85 yards per game.
Look, I mean,
that's a mediocre offense.
Cutter's back, though, because you're not going to start Matt Ryan on another offensive coordinator with the same head coach.
I mean,
that'd be his fourth coordinator under the same head coach.
It just speaks to a larger issue of outside, you know. That's another thing. It's just like Quinn over the years, just like Shanahan had that first really bad year, and then he was, you know, the hottest thing since sliced bread, and we had an all-time historic season. And then I think where we really messed up, where we could have actually redeemed ourselves for the Super Bowl loss, was bringing in Sark. Sark struggled. I mean, it was better that second year, but once again, it was like, why are you going to bring in bring a guy into a team that's in win-down mode, who was, you know, one choke job away from winning a Super Bowl, bringing in a guy who's never called a down in the NFL? It's just a baffling, horrific decision.
Yeah, that would have been a better spot for a Koetter type.
Yeah, if Koetter comes in that year, it may not have been anything spectacular, but you would have had a better running game. You would have had a healthier Freeman. You would have had Tevin Coleman at your disposal. I just keep looking at all the ways Dan Quinn screwed up, and it just those deficiencies tower over any successes he's ever had, cumulatively, over the years.
Let me ask you this, Graham. We got Dirk Koetter.
Yeah.
We got Dan Quinn.
Mm.
And we got Thomas Dimitroff.
Yes.
You're in Arthur Blank's office.
Who am I?
You're you.
Okay.
But Arthur's a big user to the Atlanta Zone podcast.
I can't imagine how he could be after we just shit on his team every week, but go on.
And he's like, you know what? This guy gets it. This Graham Waldrop guy.
Okay, yeah.
He knows how to run a football organization. I want his opinion. I'm going to give him the power to make a decision. He thinks it's so fucking easy, sitting on the other side of his mic.
Yeah, armchair owner,
yeah,
coach, etc. Yeah.
If I could do it, that's what you do. It's unacceptable. So he's heard all that, Graham.
Okay.
So you're sitting down in front of those three guys, Thomas, Dan, Dirk.
Mm.
You get to fire one and one only.
Dirk. Oh, well, I don't know. I got to take that back. That's tough.
Oh, now you know how Arthur feels.
But you're putting in, you know, perceived, or you're putting in your own sort of, you're putting me in a hypothetical where I have to choose. I would have wiped the floor with all of them. But if I only had to pick one, I might pick Thomas for the sake of the present and the future of the organization, because I don't think you can evaluate offensive or defensive line talent worth a flip.
Right.
And if you had a better offensive line, maybe Cutter's run game wouldn't be as shit. But Cutter also, just as I mentioned, historically sucks trying to establish the running game as a coordinator. But I would rather, if you put a gun to my head, I would pick Thomas. Thomas has more lives than 500 cats put together, and I don't understand how that is. Yeah. Thomas is my guy.
I agree with you, Graham. Yeah, it's pretty baffling that he's back.
Yeah. Well, we'll see how this all shakes out. The Falcons have the 16th overall pick in this year's NFL draft. And I'm sure we'll spend it on a receiver because we need help in that area.
Yeah. Was that on the podcast that I went on about how baffling it is that we drafted Calvin Ridley?
Yes, we talked about that.
Okay.
I mean, I love Calvin. I think he's played well, but we've seen with just Julio, it's fine. You could plug in
Russell Gage.
Russell Gage really came on down the stretch. He was not worth a first-round pick considering all the other needs that we had at that point.
It was a luxury.
Yeah.
That's why Thomas...
Just another reason, another strike against him. The worst thing that I can think that can happen is that this keeps happening every year, and we become the new Cowboys, where the Cowboys kept bringing back Jason Garrett, even though it would be mediocre season after mediocre season. Maybe you get in the playoffs once, but you wouldn't do anything. That's my worst fear.
Do you think he's more of a Jason Garrett or a Marvin Lewis?
I think, Dan?
Yeah.
I would say more of a Garrett, because I think he's probably better coached than both of them because he's actually had postseason success. I would lean more, if I had to make the, you know, tie him to a guy, I'd tie him more to Garrett, I guess. Because Marvin Lewis, I mean, I don't even know if Garrett ever won the postseason, honestly. I have no freaking idea.
But, yeah, I mean, Marvin Lewis had, like, 15 lives.
Yes, he survived for a long time.
Yeah.
Went through, like, three or four different quarterbacks. Ugh. Well, the show will only get more depressing if we talk about the Hawks.
Got to do that. I'd rather finish on the Braves.
Okay. All right, Adam, let's move on to the Atlanta Hawks. The Hawks are 8-29. Worst team in the league.
Yeah, I didn't see this coming, Graham.
This is mind-boggling. Travis Schlenk has admitted that he was wrong in the way he constructed the roster.
What did he say?
He mentioned that, you know, he didn't put enough veteran leadership in there, and that has hurt, and too much is being expected of Trey, et cetera, et cetera. Stuff that we've already, you know, pontificated on, but he actually...
The Torian Princes, the Bazemore.
He's a big guy. Deadman.
Deadman.
Yeah. But I do want to give big shout-out to Trey Young. He's averaging 28.9 points per game, which is fourth best in the league. Averaging 8.4 assists, which is fifth best in the league. And over his last 10 games, I want to read you off a couple of things here. I'm just going to read off the points and the assists. All right, 23-8, 30-7, 42-8, 30-8, 47-6, 30-11, 12-2, 28-10, 41-8, 29-12. I mean, this guy's playing out of his mind. He's doing everything he can.
Can I read you some numbers as well?
Yes.
38-10-11.
Oh, I know who this is.
39-10-12. 31-7-13. 35-7-10. 19-7-4. Who's that?
That's Luka Doncic.
Yeah.
He already has like 10 triple doubles this year.
What the hell? Did we make a mistake, Graham?
Well, here's the thing, and I'm kind of getting tired of people the comparison is inevitable because we traded Luka for Trey, pretty much, and, you know, for an additional lottery pick. But it's not like Trey Young's a scrub.
No, he's not.
At all. But would you, you know, so it's not like we picked Marvin Williams or Chris Paul over again. No. Thank God. But, you know, coming out, I mean, I think we both said Luka, you know, profiles to be a better player because of his height.
But what if it's like...
And not just his height, but just in terms of the overall package of basketball. He can shoot the three, he can pass really well, and he can rebound. Trey can't play defense. He can shoot the three. He can't really rebound. And he has amazing court vision. Is he a great player? I would say at this point he's one of the stars of the league. But Luka is in LeBron air right now in the way he's playing.
I think the comparison's like we drafted Joe Johnson, could have drafted Kobe.
Something like that. I wouldn't even say that.
But like, is in the difference in... So you think Trey's a higher skill set than a Joe Johnson?
Yes, because he can not only can he shoot, but he has an incredible passing ability, which Joe Johnson, he was called ISO Joe for a reason. Trey does take a lot of shots, but he kind of has to because of how terrible the team is. And the comparison will keep happening for as long as these guys keep playing.
I try to just like ignore Mavericks box scores. And
it's hard to, though. The Sports Center throws on your face every day that, you know, Luka Doncic has another triple-double, and it's only January 3rd, and he's got 10 on the year or whatever already. Yeah. It's like, Jesus Christ.
No, and Trey's doing his part. Hopefully he'll be an all-star this year. I hear he's been invited to be in the three-point competition. These are the things we have to care about now, Graham.
It's pathetic.
We keep saying I think we'll see some better basketball now that the big three are...
No, I don't think so.
You throw that one out the window.
I mean, you look at it since December...
Well, no, we've been...
No, listen.
Look at it.
Since December 2nd, we've only won three games. So that tells you everything you need to know.
Well, that's improvement. We've been closer in games.
Yeah, I mean, great.
That's huge for us, Graham.
It's just sad, man. This team coming on. I mean, maybe we were mistaken in saying our expectations incorrectly. Oh, big time. But
well, like, I mean, like we said, though, like, I guess those veteran pieces meant so much more than we realized. We thought the young guys were ready. It was too early.
Yeah.
Not to mention the John Collins thing.
I mean, since John has come back, he's had like two amazing games against the Cavaliers and the Bulls. Where he had 27 and 10 and 34 and 8. And, you know, he's still getting his points and his rebound. He's still a double-double threat. But it hasn't been like... And it's like we said, right? We shouldn't expect John Collins coming back to be, like, the end-all, be-all. Because he's not, you know... It's not like we're getting LeBron or something. I hate to keep saying we're getting, you know... Comparing everybody to LeBron. But, you know, it's not like we're getting a stud to come in here and save our souls. You know, from damnation, which is what this season is.
Right, and I'll be honest, Graham. I haven't been watching a ton of the Hawks basketball this year.
I haven't watched as many games as I was watching a lot, and then around early to mid December, I started to check out a little bit.
I mean, 136-102, 143-120, like 122-112. I can't watch that basketball, Graham.
No, it's ugly.
Where the hell's the defense? From a defensive minded coach.
I don't know at this point. I feel like. The way the Hawks locker room, at least the way it's talked about, kind of reminds me of a workplace where everyone's just sort of has had it, and they're not in a good place from a morale standpoint, and they're still going to work hard, they're still going to do what they need to do, but they're not going to do it at a high enough level because the morale has just been lost. And I think we're going to see this for the rest of the year. I don't see us winning more than 15, 16 games.
We'll pull a classic Atlanta sports and really pick it up so about four teams end up worse than us.
But maybe, but I mean...
Get the sixth or seventh pick.
Sure. But regardless, this season has been a big disappointment for Tony Ressler, for Travis Schlenk, for Lloyd Pierce. It's been a misfire. We expected... You know, I don't think it was unrealistic it was unrealistic to expect it because we didn't, you know, we took away the components that worked so well for the second half of the year with the Bazemores and the Deadmonds helping out the Trae Youngs and the John Collinses. And we, you know, Vince Carter can only do so much. He's just one guy.
Yeah.
Who's on his way out
and you know, it's not gonna. You can't fill the void of three or four other players from a leadership standpoint, and once Collins went out, it was kind of like everything just went to shit, and it's impossible to recover from as bad of a start as we've had. Even when he came back, the proof is in the pudding. Since he's come back, we've won like two games or something like that. I mean,
it is what it is, Graham.
Excuse me, one game. We've won one game since he's come back.
Since John Collins has come back?
Yeah, we've only won one game.
That's not true.
It is true. I'm looking at it right now against the Magic.
We also beat Indiana.
Oh, he didn't play in that game for whatever reason. I can't remember why.
Mm-hmm.
So, it's even worse.
Well,
it is what it is. It's a lost season.
This isn't something to be too depressed about.
No.
We've got plenty of things that I'm not depressed about, but a rebuilding season going as planned isn't one of them. But
what do you think about
it? The Schlenk needs to do something, though.
Well, let's talk about the rumors about Andre Drummond. I'd almost forgotten about that. It came out either last week it was last week, I believe, where it was rumored confirmed that the Hawks and the Pistons were talking about trading, so it came out last week that the Hawks and the Pistons were engaging in trade negotiations for Andre Drummond to come to the Hawks. My first reaction was cool because I like Andre Drummond. He's won me some money on DraftKings. He's a monster inside, great rebounder. He can put up 20 points, 20 boards. He's had an excellent career. He's in his prime. The problem is that he only has a couple years left on his contract, and who knows what we'd have to give up for him.
Yeah, it seems pretty dumb to me, because he's going to be commanding a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
And, I mean, what, we're ready to win a championship next year or something?
Or even compete, even to try and get the 6 or 7 seed. I mean, are you going to be able to do that with this group? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know. And that's a huge risk you're taking if you have to give up a first-round pick and some other pieces for Drummond coming in here. It's like, I totally agree with you. It seems very ill-advised to make this move, particularly when one of those years is going to be this year when the season is lost. Yeah. So you're going to have 1 year of Drummond to maybe get the 8th seed or 7th seed or something.
No, it's
an awful idea.
I think that's just a silly rumor. I don't see nothing that the Schlenk has done would lead me to believe that he would make that move.
It was confirmed that there are negotiations happening.
Well,
that doesn't mean that it will, but I'm just saying he is engaging.
Unless it's all about us taking on the money, that's a different story. Maybe they just don't want to pay out the rest of the contract, and we're willing to do that.
But you can't give up a first-round pick for that.
No, you're not. You're giving up lesser assets if that's the case.
Yeah.
What are the Pistons like this year?
They're very good. I don't think they're in the playoff hunt.
If it's just like a straight money grab, then sure, whatever. But
you can't give up that much. I mean, he averages 17 points per game and 16 rebounds. He's first in the league in rebounding, which has been
for a while.
It would be cool. I mean, he and Trey would definitely hook up on a ton of alley-oops. He would be a formidable presence inside, and we wouldn't have to rely on Bruno Fernando to be starting games, which has not worked out at all, or have John Collins rotate into the five. We could have a legitimate big man who is one of the better players in the league.
Yep.
Or at least one of the better big
men. I haven't looked at it recently. We might have other like first-round picks coming our way from some of these trades. The Taurean trade, maybe?
Yeah, I'm not sure all the details. I mean, I still wouldn't give up anything, though.
I wouldn't trade. I sure as hell wouldn't trade our first-round pick this year, because that should be top three.
I think any of our first-round picks we can't give up.
I want that kid from Georgia, Anthony Edwards.
Yeah, he's good. But I wouldn't want to give up any of our draft picks for Drummond for a year and some change of Drummond. Where our ceiling, if we had 5 years of Drummond, do it. Fuck it. Because that's a guy that can help you win a championship. But we don't have that.
No.
So you just shouldn't do it. It's a stupid thing to pursue.
Well,
simple as that.
Agreed.
Yeah. So let's hope that doesn't happen. And other contract world issues, Adam.
Josh Donaldson is still unsigned.
Wait, let me refresh Josh Donaldson. I've done this
like 20 times a day.
Nothing new, Graham. Still unsigned.
So there's been some reports that have come out that initially sounded good, where the Twins were supposedly backing down. It was between like the Twins and Nationals and the Braves. It seemed that how it all has shaken out so far. Twins were supposedly backing down, and I was surprised they were even pursuing Donaldson to begin with, because they led the league in home runs last year, but the pitching was deficient. So why would they add another guy who can hit 30 home runs when they have all these pitching holes and they're going to spend a buttload of money on him? And then the Nationals signed Asdrubal Cabrera and Starlin Castro to fill in their empty outfield piece, or excuse me, infield pieces. So it seemed like they were backing down. So it just seemed like they come down to the Braves. And then Donaldson names his price, which I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, was 4 years, $110
million. Yeah.
Is what he was asking. It's not known what the offers were, but Mark Bowman, the Braves.com beat reporter, said that the Braves are not, today he mentioned that the Braves were not, their offer to Donaldson was not, so Mark Bowman came out today and said that the Braves' offer to Donaldson was not the highest amount that's been offered to him. So it makes you wonder who has offered the most. And it's a little bit of an odd situation. This continues to be stretched out as long as it has been.
I think it's stretched out because he's just waiting on the Braves.
Perhaps.
And we do know that they've agreed to go to the 4 years, which we didn't think they would do.
Right.
So that's a good sign.
Right.
And you're not going to let him get away over a few million dollars.
Right. But Mark Bowman has said that, at least to him, from what he's been able to dig up, that the Braves haven't even come close to making the they're not even the ballpark, pun actually intended, of the other offers Donaldson has received.
That's not good.
No. So it's odd, and then you got a Minneapolis.
But they know that he wants $110 million. What are they at, like 80?
I don't know. But apparently, according to Darren Wolfson of SKOR North Radio in Minneapolis, who I guess is a guy in the know of the Twins, he says the Twins are still in the mix. They made a four-year offer, and he believes that their offer is in the $85 million range.
That seems so low.
Yes, and that the two sides remain in quote-unquote near daily communication. Some other reports have mentioned that the Nationals may have made the biggest offer, but it's highly speculative. So who knows what's really going on.
I'm not
going to
get into this dirt, Graham.
But, okay, that's fine if you don't want to get too into it. But
well, go ahead. What else you got
to
say about
it? Well, it's just kind of interesting to me that Donaldson, I mean, get what you can get, right? And you can't fault a guy for trying, but I don't see anyone actually shelling out that much money for him, considering where that puts him at the end of that deal. I mean, this could turn into an albatross kind of contract if Donaldson falls off. And his last season was fantastic, and we can't take anything away from that. Offensively, defensively, he was pretty outstanding. But that's just a lot to ask of a guy who is on the wrong side of 30. He will be really on the wrong side of 30 by the time that deal is over.
But we have to do it.
I don't see that. Yeah. Unless there's some trade that we can make that can bring in a bat that's comparable.
All right, think about it this way. Would you rather the two options, well, three options. You got Camargo. That's option one. Option two is overpay the last 2 years of Josh Donaldson. Maybe it's just the last year that it's a complete albatross.
We'll see.
But Liberty Media showing that we have a lot more money to spend than people have thought in the past.
Well, for not even close to what he wants, maybe that's not true. I guess we'll see.
The payroll's already at $140 million, Graham.
Ooh. Yeah, we're really close to that luxury tax.
You're the worst.
Don't blame me. Blame Atlanta Sports.
For your pessimism?
Yeah.
How can
you be optimistic about anything, Adam? Anything in your life when you're a fan of all these teams?
I saw somewhere where we're going to have the third highest payroll of the major leagues, and you're still not going to
get the fuck out of here. That's not true.
Yeah. If we sign Donaldson. Okay. Anyways, clearly
That's all.
You don't have hearsay. To have all the facts to do a podcast.
No, you don't.
So you can say whatever the hell we want.
Exactly.
You got Camargo. You paid for Donaldson. You're trying to win now. Well, you can't. This is when you want to win.
Yes.
You got Acuna for cheap. You got Ozzie for cheap. You got Freddie still. You can afford to overpay for Donaldson.
Mm.
Or you trade two of your top five prospects for like a year and a half of Arenado.
Yeah, I'd rather do the Donaldson.
Yeah, you just take the money option.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
I mean, yeah. Unless, like I said, unless there's some trade that we're not even considering that Anthopoulos can pull off, that's more reasonable. But I don't know what the hell that is.
Arenado's the only, like the Chris Bryant was the other one thrown out there for a trade. Yeah. Donaldson's a better player than Chris Bryant.
Yeah.
Arenado's the only guy out there that's better than Donaldson.
Well, I mean, I don't know if Donaldson's a better player. He had a better season than Chris Bryant last year. The problem with Bryant is that he's only got like a year left, and then he'll head free agency. So it's like those two guys, if you want to trade for them, are not going to work. I'm just trying to think of like someone else, but no one really comes to mind of who could
just pay the money you got to.
I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, like, there's been a lot of steam. You know, David Bryan mentioned today on Twitter that he doesn't think this is going to last for more than another week. Once again, it's all speculation. But
well, the fact that David Bryan has said multiple times that he is pretty confident that the Braves are going to re-sign him, that says a lot coming from him.
No, we'll see. He's also pretty confident we're going to beat the Cardinals.
Well, that's a different thing.
Indeed. Yeah. But, yeah, I at this point, I hope we do. We still have a lot of other issues, I think, beyond this. But particularly in the outfield. But that's another discussion for another day. I just think it's interesting. And it's tough to talk about all this bullshit because you just don't know what's real and what's not. I mean, Mark Bowman is usually a reliable source, but it's not like he knows everything or is in these negotiations. I mean, Alex Anthopoulos plays his cards very close to the chest. I mean, he was talking about before we signed Will Smith and Chris Martin, all those guys, you know, in the bullpen, he was talking about how he was trying to focus on starting pitching. So who the fuck, you know, it's just a bunch of trying to spend a lot of time on this, which is kind of negating this segment here, is kind of ridiculous because you just don't know. All you can do is just put your bullshit out in the world and your opinion, which isn't based on any sort of fact. It's all relativity.
Well, all you can do is look at the facts, and the facts are that A, we know the Braves were willing to go to 4 years.
Yes.
Which is a fact trending in the right direction. Mm-hmm. B,
the Nationals signed two infielders.
Yes.
Which is good.
That is fact.
Yeah.
And I don't know about the Twins. That article that Bowman was talking about was completely different from what everything else I've read today. So everything else is saying Twins are out of it. Why would Donaldson want to go to Minnesota?
Money. They offer him the most money.
Yeah, if they offer him like $150 million, they'd have to like just go way above and beyond anything the Braves are willing to do.
Well, if they've offered $85 million and the Braves aren't even close to the top offer.
I don't think that's, I mean.
Once again, hearsay, we don't know.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see how it all shakes out. I'm sure by tomorrow when I'm editing this podcast, we'll have signed Donaldson to a four-year $95 million deal or something.
Well, we also thought it was going to be done around Thanksgiving.
Thought it was going to be done around Christmas.
Then again, Bryce Harper and Machado last year didn't sign until like
7 weeks March. From now. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, go figure.
Well, Graham, you just got really sad all of a sudden.
I'm not sad. I'm just, you know, this is our life. This is our lives.
What's wrong? We're vying for a huge free agent.
No, it's fine. It's fine. It's just, you know, I can't expect anything. And what do you do if this doesn't work? You're fucked.
You
put Riley and Camargo.
Sign Marcell Ozuna.
That would be such a waste of money.
And make a big trade at some point. Trade some of these prospects.
Yeah, I doubt that will ever happen. Anyway. We'll see how it all shakes out, and we hope it works out for the best and that we can have something to be semi-happy about this brutal, brutal winter of 2020.
Graham, the Saints lost in the playoffs.
That's true. And the Patriots.
Yes.
See, that started the year out on a good note.
Yeah.
We should be a little more optimistic. Maybe that's good karma finally coming to the Atlanta sports fan. We should maybe try to get our hopes up a little bit.
Yeah.
It's not like they've been crushed in the worst possible ways for a sports fan's hopes to be crushed. in the past.
The Saints have been crushed in the worst spot. Like, can you imagine being the Saints fans right now?
Oh, yeah.
Losing three straight years on the last play in the playoffs? That is, it's close to as bad as our Super Bowl.
It's not.
That is brutal. Three straight years?
But it's not like they were in the Super Bowl in any of those games.
But they were super, like, they were like the favorites to go to the Super Bowl in each one of those years and had a disappointing loss. That's pretty rough, Graham.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's not rough. It's just, it's not 28-3. Nothing is.
What if they do it 4 years in a row?
They would have to do that like 15 years in a row to be comparable to me.
No.
They'd have to do it in the Super Bowl. They did it in the Super Bowl and on top of all these 4 years, then I'll give it to you.
Okay.
That would be the kicker.
All right.
That'd be the kick in the nuts to the point where your nuts have receded into your ball sack, never to be seen again. They're not, it's like you don't have any testicles anymore.
That's a good point, Graham.
Yeah. Well, I think this wraps up today's episode of Atlanta Zone. Thank you again for listening. I hope you guys have had a happy New Year holiday season. It's time to get back to reality. It's time to get back to Atlanta sports. It's time to get back to your lives. Until next time, rise up, stay in brotherhood, chop on, unite and conquer, and remain true to Atlanta. Hospitality.
Hospitality.